We have a renowned guest here tonight.
Perhaps he can declare which esteemed lord is telling the truth.
Neither.
Are you calling me a liar, old man?
The butcher of Blaviken bleats utter nonsense.
Perhaps the lord's encountered rare subspecies of manticore.
Perhaps our esteemed guest would like to entertain us with how he slayed the elves at the edge of the world.
Welcome to Kinfolk Lore, a podcast where we explore fictional worlds that bring people together. I'm Andrea.
And I'm Paul, and we're cousins who love to talk about world building in sci-fi and fantasy. We hope that over time, through our shared love of our favorite stories, we all become family on this podcast journey.
For our second season, we will be discussing The Witcher, the epic fantasy show by Netflix. Today, we're going to talk about the major plot points in episode 4, titled Of Banquets, Bastards, and Burials, and give you our reflections on the show and some takeaways that will help you navigate this world.
Kinfolk Lore crew, this whole podcast contains adult content, much like the show The Witcher contains adult content. So if you don't like adult content, no hard feelings. We wish you a shitless death. But if you like commentary about people hiding their sausage in the wrong pantry, this is probably the place to be. This is episode 4.
So just a programming note, for this episode, we're changing our summary slightly because of the non-linear nature of the narrative in episode 4. So we're going to cover each storyline by character rather than by the order in which it appears in the episode. Paul's going to start us off with the story of the star of the show, the White Wolf, the Butcher of Blaviken, the Witcher, Geralt of Rivia.
Geralt. All right. Here you go. In a tavern, as usual, a man is telling a story about Geralt's fight with a monster. He's insisting that Geralt is dead. Like, he just knows. He's telling all these things about...
He's like, I was there.
And as he's telling this gut-wrenching monologue, here comes Yaskier. Here he comes. Oh, yeah, this is good. This is super good. He always leaves out the details. And everybody's like, why is this guy like that? He's probably dead. And Yaskier's like, probably not. And Geralt, true to form, arrives after killing what monster he was fighting from inside of the monster's belly and demands his coin. At that point, Yaskier has a song that's skyrocketing up the charts, actually. Skyrocketing. Number one with
about
a bullet.
About to drop the remix.
He's dropping.
About to drop the remix.
The whole freaking tavern breaks out into Geralt of Rivia, or better known to many of us as Toss a Coin to Your Witcher. Oh, Valley of Plenty. And they all harmonize and hit, like, you know, the alto, soprano, the tenors. They're going in.
I'm telling you, it is the new Don't Stop Believing of this world. throw a little Yaskier on, the whole crowd goes crazy.
Yeah, he's crazy. He's doing his thing. The bard has been good for the Witcher. The Witcher stories have been good for the bard. So here we go. He's like, so Yaskier says, hey man, you kind of owe me a solid. You see all those people singing this song about you? I made you famous. So he asked him to attend a banquet. And he needs him as a bodyguard. Apparently, Yaskier has been, hiding his sausage in the wrong pantries, as Geralt said. And he's hated for sleeping with the wives of many of the nobility in the kingdom. And
not just their wives, though.
Yeah.
Like, he was like concubines, wives, yeah. Yeah, sometimes their moms.
Oh, God. It's so good. So the banquet is being held to mark a special occasion. It's the betrothal of Queen Calanthe's daughter, Princess Pavetta. They arrive at the banquet and try to be a little incognito. And the minute that they walk in, the bard is like, hey, keep a low profile. The minute they walk in, here's my boy, Malsak, right? He sets it off with Geralt of Rivia. He's no incognito with the White Wolf. He walks in, everyone knows him. I haven't seen you since the plague, this guy says. Like, ugh, that's not a like touch point I want to remember if I'm like from this world. But anyway, he greets Geralt. Queen Calanthe, after that, makes a super dope entrance. Armor covered in blood and mud, telling people she had to like let people know who was queen still, order some beer. And she's already arranged pretty much, according to Malsak, Pavetta's marriage to Crack and Crate. The nephew of King Iced. She decides to honor Geralt of Rivia with a seat at her table and ask him to be the bouncer at the party. Basically, get rid of anybody that's unwanted. You know, maybe it's a little foreshadowing of what she may think comes later in the episode. But this is a wild party, people arguing. She's like, hey, if anybody gets out of order, you know, maybe a monster shows up, you know, take care of him for me. He's like,
She has a lot of nerve.
Yeah.
She has a lot of nerve. I was just like, first she's like, come be my guest of honor. This is an honored guest, everyone. Yeah. So chill out and be respectful. And then she's like, so can you offer your services at this party even though you came as a guest?
Calanthe, yeah, she's laying it on thick. It was definitely like out of order. And, you know, she basically, the suitors at this point, after Geralt turns down her offer, start presenting their case for Pavetta's hand. And one of the things that really, really, really made me laugh was the king of Nilfgaard. She like caps him, like caps on him super hard, like dunking full time, double like pump around the rim, like just reverse style. Like she's sitting there talking about like, hey, we're the jewel of the north, but you guys are pretty much a shitty kingdom from the south that has nothing and has an unstable government and there's a different king every day. Will you be able to hold off the usurper? I think not. It's pretty fucking funny. And you show Calanthe's like condescending nature and her strength in that moment. Like she kind of does away with him pretty easily.
She's mean.
Yeah.
This was harsh. I was like, my boy Nilfgaard here comes out. He's trying to make his case so he can get the hand of Princess Pavetta. He's out here. It's before he even starts talking, the crowd starts playing a bagpipe.
Mm-hmm.
They're just dunking on him. Then the queen is like, "Let him speak. Let him speak." And then she dunks on him. It was not great.
But he did. I felt bad for him a little, but he kind of ended off with my seed is strong. That is a fucking terrible end off. Like, hey, I have like mad brothers. My seed is strong. You're definitely going to get a male heir. And she's like, motherfucker, I don't care about a male heir. Like, get out of here. Anyway,
I mean, Pavetta's face when he said my seed inside of Princess Pavetta.
Oh.
Pavetta was like, get rid of this guy,
yeah,
mom.
Exactly.
Like, he's gotta go.
Who even says that? Who says that? It's gross. Apparently the king of Nilfgaard. Anyway, so just as Cratch is about to be presented, a new knight appears. Lord Urchion of Erlenwald says he's come to claim Princess Pavetta's hand in marriage. When his helmet is knocked off by Iced, it is revealed that he is Sonic the Hedgehog. No. Holy crap. It's Sonic. You know, he just dropped the movie on Friday. He's like living his best life out here. And he's trying to get married. So anyway, he has a hedgehog head and a man's body. And at that point, the queen demands Geralt to kill him. And Geralt refuses because he says he's a man that's been cursed. He's not a monster. And a fight breaks out, and it appears that Urchion is going to be killed, but Geralt intervenes, and the two of them basically kick ass together, just romping, like whipping people. And then Ice joins
easily.
Easily.
They're not struggling.
No.
I mean, these suitors who are gathered are weak. Like, it's not good. Geralt and Urchion take on these guys pretty easily.
What happened to the My Seed is Strong? Like, what happened to that guy? Like,
no, I think that guy left. He was like, you know what? I'm out.
So anyway, they start working on it, and Ice joins in. And Ice basically joins in because before the fight breaks out, the law of surprise had been called. And so he wants to make sure that that's upheld because it's a law that's pretty sacred in this world of the continent. Finally, Calanth and Geralt come face to face, and she demands the fighting ends. Apparently, Pavetta knows the Hedgehog Knight, who she calls Duny. He tells her that the queen, that he was cursed. He saved the life of King Rhoynar and from certain death. He chose the Law of Surprise as his payment. Geralt calls out the queen, saying that she knew that he was going to be coming and tried to get him to be the person who would kill her. Malsak and Ice try to persuade Calanthe that she must honor destiny. She refuses. I bow to no law made by men who never bore a child.
Best quote of the whole episode. I was on my feet. I was like, "That's. I don't agree with you, but that's what's up."
Oh, man.
I was like, be wrong and strong.
Yeah.
Do it.
Oh, man. Yeah, no, Calanth is definitely, Calanth, she is on one this episode. I like her style, even though she was definitely wrong in this instance. She is definitely committed to her cause. So Pavetta says that she loves Duny and she'll marry him, whether Calanth approves of it or not. And Calanth appears to relent, but then she tries to kill him with a dagger. She whispers in his ear, "This is your destiny," and pulls the knife. Gets ready to put him in, stab him in the throat. And, you know, shout out to Pavetta with magical, magical musical stylings. The voice of an angel, you know, like she came out here, forget Ariana or Mariah. She is Patti LaBelle out here in these streets, kicking off her shoes, singing the song, just belting it out. I love it. And she, you know, she sings or she screams. And everyone is blown away and blast the entire
literally
crowd.
Blown away. Blown Not away. Blown away with the stylings of Pavetta. Literally blown away.
You see what I did there? Double entendre. There he goes. Everyone's blown away. There it is. It's good. Oh, man.
Yaskier's over there like, man, I wish I could sing like that.
Word. Man, with that voice, I would have 10 number one hits. This is amazing. So, yeah, so basically, at this point, the room is thrown into chaos. They start to float, Pavetta and Duny start to float above the ground. Geralt, like, tries to use a sign, like, to stop it. It's of no use. Malsak tries to do some stuff. It's of no use. Like, it's just, she's so strong. He even drinks one of the potions that we talked about earlier with the herbs that are like deadly to everyone but a witcher, so he can become more aware to try to fight against this. Doesn't do anything. And basically he throws another sign after drinking the incantation that not really stops it, but distracts Pavetta from what she's doing to look at what he's doing. And at that point, because she's distracted, you know, it comes to an end. At that point, Calanthe tells Pavetta that she thought her grandmother's gift had skipped her, like it skipped Calanthe. She agrees to let the two of them marry, and then Ice takes this moment, you know, opportunist, jumps up in there and be like, hey, you know what? I'll be marrying Calanthe because she's accepted my marriage proposal. And she does. She says, hey, you know what? There's going to be two weddings here today. I hope no one objects. Pretty cool moment in the episode. And Pavetta and Duny are married. Duny are married, and the curse is broken to reveal a handsome-ish knight. Like, you know,
he's all right. He's okay. Right. He's not bad looking. He's better than the hedgehog.
I mean, it's an upgrade. It's a definite glow up from hedgehog status. You know, like that's it. He went from like Sonic to like Prince of Dorne. You know what I mean? That's it. So that was it. So Geralt is about to leave when Duny says he must give him something that he can't for saving his life. He claims that he can't basically start off this new life of his within the shadow of debt. So Geralt says, you know what, I don't need anything. I'm good. No, he says, no, I need to do something. So he says, well, I'll claim the same thing that you claimed and the law of surprise, that which you do not know that you have, but that is within your possession. So just then, Pavetta vomits, little morning sickness. And we know that she is pregnant. Geralt does his patented fuck and walks. Man of few words. So he walks out. Malsak, like, leaves after him and tells Geralt that he's going to stay and help Pavetta to hone her powers because he thinks that, you know, he can help her. And that he warns Geralt that to dismiss the Child of Surprise and his destiny will bring peril to this whole kingdom and everyone that was here. So Geralt dismisses this and warns him about life at court and tells him to take care of himself because he does care about Malsak and wants him to make sure that he stays away from poison and daggers and all the warnings that apparently is what's driving Geralt off. Besides the fact that he's a miserable owner that would rather live beyond the wall. Oh, wait, that's a different white wolf. in the next scene that takes place, it's in Ciri's timeline. A man is searching for the body of the queen. He is a carnivore and eats the flesh of her arm at the request of Frangilla.
Frangilla.
Yeah. You know
who everybody was dunking on the last episode, Frangilla.
Yeah, Frangilla's got some powers now. She looks like she's about her shit. She's not.
She had a glow up too.
She did. She definitely did. She cut off the Brandy extensions. She got like a little natural. She's like out here living her best life. I'm feeling it. Let's go. So Frangilla kills him, and then kind of wants to decipher by touching his guts, his entrails, where Ciri is. Apparently this was like a very, you know, first inclination that we would have GPS in our society. She finds out that Ciri is actually in Brokolan Forest. And one of the guards, the people say, hey, we can mount an army and go into Brokolan Forest. And the king of Nilfgaard is like, you dummy, you don't take an army into Brokolan Forest. There's no use there. And so they're going to go in pursuit of her, and they reveal that Malsak is now their prisoner.
Oof. All right.
What a party.
What a wild party. This was a lot here.
Yeah.
I don't even really know what to say.
Yeah.
So we have the reveal of how Geralt and Ciri are connected. So obviously this is taking place a long time ago in the timeline, because Ciri is not born yet. This was a lot. There's a lot of magic in this.
A lot of magic, and it's really great because the whole episode opens with a symbol of a tree, a family tree with a sword within it, which kind of is similar to what we'll cover a little bit in Ciri's timeline, but it's really cool because it kind of shows this is her origin story. This is like what started her life. This whole idea of, you know, the law of surprise, and for the second time, like, you know, law of surprise brought together her mother and father, which is great, but they actually fell in love, even though it wasn't just based on the oath. And then the second time now, her and Geralt are joined together through the same, you know, tradition in this society. And so it's really cool to, like, get an inclination of, like, how these stories tie in together, you know?
Yes. I mean, finally, we're understanding why we're following Cirilla at all.
Yeah.
Right? That we're finally getting. And it was also great to see Pavetta's magic.
Yeah.
Because we've seen that Cirilla's magic can be devastating, but all we've seen her do essentially is destroy things, or essentially we've seen her scream, and that's had some kind of ripple effect.
Yeah.
The fact that Pavetta can essentially fly and obviously knows some spells, because she's talking in Elder to Dooney as they're kind of floating above the room. She throws the entire room in chaos.
Yeah.
I mean, she's extremely powerful. And Malsak cannot even attempt to contain her. If Geralt hadn't been there, I'm not sure what would have happened.
But the wild thing about that is I don't think Geralt really... I was wondering about something, and maybe other people have read further along or know more about this and they can speak to it. The distraction that stopped the spell at that point, I was wondering whether it really was that he drank the incantation and the sign did it, or that when he did it, that Pavetta actually had an inkling that their destinies were, that her unborn child and him were linked, their destinies were linked. Because she, like, literally stops and just looks at Geralt, like, out of, like, surprise of, like, oh, he's here. And then everything stops. And it's, I don't know if, like, because she was whispering something to Elder, she was very locked in, and then looks at Geralt directly. And I don't know if it was because of what he did, because he tried once before and did nothing, or whether it was because she is actually just relenting because she knows the importance of the next thing that's going to happen. It's very interesting. I don't know. I had that thought.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
So it's pretty cool. Pretty cool stuff. I just love the dialogue in this. This whole section is just, Yaskier really is, him and Malsak have some of the best. And Calanthe, like, they're just, like, turned up in this portion. And as dry as Geralt's delivery was, he had some one-liners that just, like, cracked me the hell up. Like, you know? So I really dug it. So I really dug this part of the episode.
Yeah. This was a witty, series of scenes. Because this was actually cut in. A lot of this was cut in with Yennefer's story, which we are going to talk about next. Mm-hmm. But there were some really, like, witty moments and, yeah, I think that our boy Yaskier had a rough party. Let's admit it. He maybe should have stayed home.
Well, first of all, he gets told, they tell everyone that he got kicked in the balls by, like, what was it, an ox or something?
An ox as a child.
As a child. So he couldn't possibly be the guy who's sleeping with all these guys' wives. He starts off with some, like weak sauce for his first song, and the queens are like, no, play that shit at my funeral. Like, don't play that now. Give me a jig. Like, what's wrong with you? Like, so, you know, his musical stylings are there. He gets shown up by the princess who has magical pipes, blows the whole crowd away. It's really awesome. And, you know, it's just, you know, and then he gets really, really nervous when Geralt's like, yeah, both the lords are wrong. He was shook. He was like, no, don't do it. Don't do it. And Geralt, like, backs down a little bit. He's like, oh, well, maybe it was a sub, you know, species of manticore that you guys are talking about. Because they both were trying to, too much testosterone in the room. He tried to, like, take it down a notch. Ridiculous.
This party was a lot. And Geralt is just, he is not the guest of honor that you want.
No.
He really isn't. Although, I said last week I would like him to be a little bit more diplomatic, and he was very diplomatic in this episode.
He was.
So let's give him some points for being having some character growth.
I agree.
But yeah,
not growth in his wardrobe though. They continuously dunk on him in his clothes, like continuously. They're killing this guy with his wardrobe choices. Like, his fashion choice is not the move, I guess.
Also, can we just talk about how they call him old multiple times? And I'm like, I'm sorry, he's Henry Cavill, and you guys are who?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
What? Are you, how dare you?
Yeah. He is.
He looks great.
Yeah.
He looks great.
he definitely better than the dude who's like calling him the old man. That guy looked like, you know, a fake ass Robert Baratheon. He was like, he was like whack. Anyway, let's talk about Yennefer.
Yes. Yennefer had also had a really big episode. So Yennefer is traveling on the road to Lyria with a miserable looking Yennefer is listening to the complaints of this queen, Queen Kallus. Queen Kallus recently had a baby girl. She's lamenting the fact that her husband seems displeased about it since he wants a male heir. And Yennefer tells the queen that she's struggling too, that she's rethinking her past choices since all she really does is clean up political messes. This was tough to see considering that in the very last episode, the last time we saw Yennefer, she was sacrificing everything so that she could go to Irden and be the mage for this kingdom. So she's already like, I'm out on this.
Also disheartening because Kallus is like, yeah, but my stuff is worse. Like, I hear you, but like, sure, you gave up like everything about who you are, but you know what? I'm having a rougher time. Let me tell you why. Like, totally hand waves. This woman, like, she's like, open up to me. She does, and she's like, Kallus, not the best friend you want to have. Not a good listener.
No, but I think that this was an interesting talk between two women who feel that they're boxed in.
Yeah.
Callus is horrible. Like, let's just be what's real here. Like,
oh my God, like so
let's
bad.
Just talk about what's real. Mm. Like, Callus is like whiny and privileged, but she does have a very like she has a fair point of view, which is that the king doesn't care about anything but her ability to produce a male heir for him. He doesn't care about his daughter. We see that very quickly, right? Because in the very next scene, in the same scene, they are attacked by an assassin that the king sent. Mm-hmm. And the king clearly doesn't care if he's trying to kill his wife, but he doesn't care if Yennefer and the baby are collateral killed damage. In the process. Yeah. It's really terrible.
Yeah.
I said this king was trash last episode. I'm just going to put
you
that
are on the
there.
Record. I'm not going to lie. As I'm watching this, I'm like, damn, Andrea was like, yo, the way he did, you know,
Frangilla.
The way he did Frangilla, she was like, he's trash for that. And I was like, you know what? Watching this episode, Andrea was right. Definitely. He's trash. He's on brand, this guy.
Yeah. So the assassin is some kind of, I guess, sorcerer. Mm-hmm. He has a disgusting looking companion, which is some kind of enormous bug. I don't like this thing. I don't ever want to see it again. Mm. It's disgusting. So Yennefer does her best to save the queen and the princess by portaling them to the desert. But the assassin follows, coming through a portal as well. And the giant scorpion-like thing it chases them. Yennefer manages to portal them again and again, but they're being tracked. Something that the king gave the queen before she left had some kind of magical tracking device in it. And so the queen starts like frantically removing everything that she has. And like, I think it turned out to be like a comb or something from her hair. And she crushes it, but before she can even destroy it, the assassin is right behind them.
And then we get the proof that if there was sorting at boring Hogwarts, Yennefer would be House Slytherin. Hit me mm-hmm. with it.
Yeah, no, Yennefer is House Slytherin. Like, I have no disputes about that. So the queen is all like, you're an idiot and you should save us. And why can't you do this? You're supposed to protect us. And Yennefer's like, oh, okay. Bye.
Oh, it was so good. Oh, my God. Because let's just face it. Like we said, Callus is not dope. She's not a cool person. She's not cool in this situation. Like Yennefer is like killing herself to keep them safe. And she lets her know, yeah, looks like your time is up trying to produce a male heir. This is what's happening, because she's oblivious as to why the assassin's after her. And then she starts like trying to come at Yennefer. Yennefer's like, peace, I'm done. I'm done with you. Die.
And can we just say that Yennefer portals herself to the most beautiful location yet? It's this like mountainside with yellow flowers.
And sunsets, really nice sunsets. Oh my God, off in the distance. It was amazing. That was really great.
Yeah, it was great. So the queen tries to negotiate with the assassin and offers her newborn baby to him as a sacrifice.
Cementing the deal that she is super duper whack. Like, I was like, you're doing what? They'll take the baby as a sacrifice. And the assassin, at that point, I kind of rooted for what the assassin does next.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, he kills her. Yeah. He makes quick business of killing her. I was like, okay, good, bye. Just before his little creature can kill the baby, Yennefer returns. She grabs the baby and opens up another portal. But as she's running with the baby in her arms to get through the portal, the assassin throws a dagger at her and it goes straight through Yennefer and kills the child. They portal to a beach, and Yennefer is devastated by the fact that the baby died. She really did try to save her. And she sits there with the child, the baby's body, as she is talking to her and basically tells her about her worldview, which is essentially like, everything is terrible. You dodged a bullet in this world. Women are treated like vessels. So, you know, I hope that you find peace elsewhere.
It was rough.
And it was... considering that Yen started this episode saying how sad she was about the choices she made, and then the choice that she made at the end was to try to save the baby, and then she ends up burying this child on the beach. It was just, this was a really sad episode for Yennefer. She went through a lot in this episode because at this point, I think she's just kind of given up on this whole being a mage thing.
Yeah, and I think it's pretty interesting that this whole exchange, this one is in a stark contrast to what we're seeing in Syntra. But still, even in Syntra, you're still seeing hints of what we kind of hear in what Yen is talking about is what are the gender dynamics in the continent? Like, Yen is kind of saying, like, listen, let's face it. You were born a girl, and even if you were a special girl, even if they said you were special, like I was told and like you inevitably would have been told, you still would have just been a vessel. Like, they still would have saw you as something that was just to do what it is that they want in this, like, kind of hierarchy of society, in the patriarchy of the society. And what's interesting about that is that arguably, if not the most powerful monarch is Calanthe, and she's like done this through refusing to take on a mage, through refusing to like be always play along by the rules of what, you know, as she said appropriately in her court, like, you know, of what men who haven't bared children say. And still, like, you can see that tension that Yen is feeling. And I really thought that this was a powerful way for them to express to us in this world what the dynamics are in the world of, like, how people are viewed, the male heir, the willingness to kill somebody just because they can't produce a male heir, the laws that kind of are that are slanted towards, like, a male monarch that Calanthe has, like, bucked the system and, like, come into power against. And kind of, like, props to her dad, who, like, was kind of like, yeah, law of succession, whatever. Like, Calanthe's going to be the next monarch. I don't care about a male heir. So props to her dad, too, on that one.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of talk about the woman's place in this episode, mm-hmm. and a lot of it is between women, which I really liked, mm-hmm. right? So you have this conversation between the queen and Yennefer, the queen and Pavetta, that you're referencing, where she talked through basically, like, I'm a great warrior, but, like, we have to do this. Mm-hmm. Like, we still have to go through these motions. And then there's this other queen, Callis, who's a weaker queen, right? Mm-hmm. Who doesn't have any power in her kingdom. And she's talking through her circumstances, which is totally playing by the rules. Mm-hmm. And basically saying to Yen, she has this line that we should have known that she didn't really care for the baby as much, because she's looking at the baby and she says, to her, I'm the entire world. Mm. But unfortunately, it's so boring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she says to Yen, people look at you and see you for what you are, which I thought was especially interesting because we know that Yen is not exactly who she was, right? Mm-hmm. But they look at me and they see what they can get from me. So there was a lot of great conversation between the women about, like, what their place in the world is and what their purpose is. So I thought that was all really well done. And I liked that and part of the conversation that Calanthe had with Geralt was about the plight of being a woman, mm-hmm. but most of the conversations about the status of women and their power in this world were between women.
Yeah.
So I thought that was great. And then you have two women who try to use magic to change the dynamic, right? Mm-hmm. To get what they want. So Pavetta uses magic to try to save her love, Dooney. Mm-hmm. And Yennefer uses magic to try to save this baby and the queen, although she left the queen after a while. But the magic gives them the ability to try to fight back against the power dynamics, mm-hmm. but it doesn't you know, it's not as strong, I think, as some of the other forces.
And Frangilla, so for that matter. And Frangilla, like, using magic to kind of, like, actually empower the king to reach his goal. Like, when she's like, okay, this is where she is, this is what we're doing. And, I mean, because I don't think that he wins that battle without Frangilla, like, honestly. Like, I don't think, like, he wins. The army was strong, but I think, like, as we see and continue to see in her character, she actually plays a pivotal role in his forces, you know?
Yeah.
So
Frangilla, as I said, she had a glow-up.
She had a glow-up episode.
While we're on the subject of magical women.
Yes.
Let's talk about Cirilla's very short storyline that, you know, not that much happened with Cirilla, but the stuff that did happen gave us some backstory. So as you mentioned at the end of Geralt's summary, Nilfgaard is looking for Cirilla in the forest of Brokilon. And this is a magical forest. It's a forest that we saw Cirilla walking towards at the end of the last episode. This is actually how the episode opened. We're only talking about it now because Geralt's story was the main story. But the episode opened of Cirilla walking through the woods. She's still kind of in her trance. And she's confronted by these incredible, incredible badass looking women.
Super dope. Oh,
women, man. Warriors out here with arrows, daggers. They're fighters off, like, yeah. They just look intimidating. Yeah. So Ciri doesn't tell them what her name is. She says that her name is Fiona, which I think is the same name she gave in the refugee camp, right?
Yeah, she needs to come up with some original content. Like, it's like, you know, come on. It's gonna spread about this lady Fiona. Well,
you know, when you're lying, yeah, you should be consistent with your lies. Yeah. So she tells them her name is Fiona. Uh-huh. They take her to Dara, who's been wounded. We saw him get shot by an arrow in the last episode. So the women are called dryads. They have survived since the junction of the spheres, fighting off mutants and men who wanted their land. And they tell Dara and Cirilla that in order to stay, they have to drink the waters of Brokilon to prove that they mean no harm. And over time, these magical waters are also known for easing suffering. And basically, it sounds like it kind of erases your memory. Mm-hmm. So Cirilla finally tells Dara who she is, which apparently she has not done yet. She tells him that she lets it slip that she lived in the castle. And so she has to tell him that she's the granddaughter of Queen Calanthe, and that, she was told by Malsak, who helped raise her, never to tell anyone who she is outside of the castle. Dara flips out.
Rightfully so.
Rightfully so, because I don't think he knew that she was from Syntra. He did not know that she was a princess. And he basically tells her that her grandmother massacred his family, and tells her that he saw this and he's the only one who survived. So he urges her to start thinking for herself and to stop thinking about what her grandmother told her. He's basically like, she's dead, you're alive, it's time to move on. Mm-hmm. So that night Cirilla has a nightmare in which she sees basically a vision of what Dara had just told her about, which is elves being slaughtered by the Syntra army.
Slaughtered too, like,
yeah,
crazy.
I actually didn't realize this was a dream at first, and so I wasn't sure what was happening, and I was like, wait, how did we get to this, like, horrible battle? Mm-hmm. And she's basically seeing, you know, she's putting together the story she heard in the refugee camp, which was basically like about people slaughtering elves, and then experiencing that with more empathy, having now that she knows Dara's family was killed. And she wakes up from the dream, and Dara.
But before she wakes up, the thing that's interesting to me is right when she's about, when like she's seeing all the elves being slaughtered, the last part of the vision that she sees is the person who's hunting her, getting ready to slaughter her. And it's the king from Nilfgaard, that person, with you know, his sword about to swipe down her, and that's what wakes her up. So now she's like, that really illustrates to me the empathy that she's feeling of, like, here are people that have been wiped out and hunted, and now you are the hunted, and you were in a family that did the hunting, now you are the hunted. And that to me was really powerful too. So
Are we sure that guy's the king of Nilfgaard?
Maybe he's not the king of Nilfgaard, but he's the dude. He's like the...
He's the guy hunting. He's the guy hunting him. He's known as, like, right now I think he's known as the Black Knight. He is the king, to be honest. But I don't know that we know that for sure.
Well, the reason why I say it is because the only reason I put that together, and I may be wrong, but the only reason I put that together is that, like, mages are, like, sent to serve the king. And she is worked really closely with the Black Knight. And it seems like he is the ruler of that army. And she, you know, she doesn't answer to anyone else or speak with anyone else other than him, which is why I kind of deduced that.
Yeah, that's true. Frangilla's behavior towards him does kind of say that he's the king.
Yeah.
I think he is the king as well. I'm going to reserve the right to say, oops.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, man.
Okay, so when Ciri wakes from the nightmare... she sees that Dara has drank the waters of Broklon, and he tells her that he's going to be okay. She agrees to drink the waters as well, but they don't have any real effect on her. So she's taken to a tree and told that she must drink the nectar directly from the tree. And when she does this, she has a vision of being in the desert, and there's a magical tree that asks her who she is as the episode closes.
And it's like a throwback to the beginning of the episode with that image of the tree with the sword, because it looks like the same tree that doesn't have the sword within it. It's the same almost like tree as that tree in the vision.
Yeah, I mean, this tree has been, I think we've seen similar images of this tree a few times in this episode, because at one point when Yennefer portals, there's also a tree that looks kind of like it. So I think that obviously this tree is really important, either symbolically or literally, you know, in the text, like it might be, this magical tree might be really, really important to the story. I just thought that it was interesting that the episode started and ended on Cirilla, even though not that much happened with her.
Well, but it did, you know? Though. I think, like, here's what I think. It happened for us as the audience experiencing her story. Because even though a lot of the action in Geralt's sequence that we went over is Geralt being there and the Law of Surprise and giving us that piece, majority of that story is actually Cirilla's origin story. Like, it is like who mm-hmm. she is, what her family is about, you know, how they came to be, how, like, you know, her grandmother and her mother. And it gives us a clue, a big clue that, like, we talked about already, is like, I thought the gift, like, skipped you, like it skipped me from your grandmother. So Calanthe's mother, it tells you why Syntra didn't need a mage. Like, Calanthe's mother is, like, seemed like a pretty powerful sorceress and good with working with controlling her chaos without any help. So we need to figure out, I think, like, there's a connection between that and maybe the vision of the tree and all that that we'll come to find out later. Like, and I think we get a lot of her story through other people's stories throughout the episode, you know, in my opinion. So what did you think about what do you think is the gift that the grandmother has?
I don't know. I mean, that's one of the things that I wanted to talk about in the things you need to know. This is a big question for me. Who are these people?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Who Pavetta is speaking elder, and she's speaking it as if she's had some teachings in magic. I wondered, are they descended from elves? Is this part of the reason that Calanthe has, like, such a hatred of elves? Is she afraid of the magic? I don't know. I had some questions about this.
There's two things that I noticed: that Pavetta's ears are covered in her hairstyle in the episode.
Mm.
So I noticed that, and I was like, oh, I'm interested in why. And the other thing I noticed is when Iced is jumping in, doing his brown nosing to the fullest extent, like, you know, say, Queen Calanthe, if it would have been you, then the elf king would have died at your sword. Basically, she goes, huh, and doesn't respond. She never responds to that. She doesn't say, oh yeah, she just says, Geralt, any person who's willing to paint themselves in the shadows of their failures will be far more interesting conversation than the rest of these people. She moves right from that and hand waves his comment. So even though she's out killing elves, she has to have some sort of like, there seems to be like some connection that she's only willing to go but so far.
Yeah, yeah. There's definitely a mystery to Cirilla's origin, right? We're not sure where the magic comes from. I mean, we're not really sure where the magic comes from for the mages either. It seems like there may be some genetic connection, right? Because Frangilla and her uncle are both mages. We don't know if Frangilla's mother and father are also mages, but like there must be some kind of genetic, you can pass it on to your kids. But we're still not quite sure how one becomes magical. And aside from if you're a mutant, right? But the mages are not really mutants as far as we can tell.
From what I understand, it comes from the, from what we understand, like what we talked about, the only thing that we've been given so far in agreement with you is that it happened during the conjunction of the spheres, that basically humans, that chaos was introduced. The world of magic, like all of the magic of this world, came to be because of the conjunction of the spheres. How humans and mages and all those people are able to, like, you know, wield it and deal with the chaos, they haven't really totally explained that yet in the show, you know, like at all. Like, but that's the only thing that we do have to hold on to is that, okay, everyone was introduced to Elder and all these other things and chaos and all of the magic of the world during the conjunction of the spheres when all these different species came together. So that's it. That's all we got so far.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're definitely revealing some of the magical aspects slowly.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the things we need to know to sort of pull out some of the things in this episode that were in the dialogue but weren't necessarily highlighted. So you just mentioned that exchange between Iced and Calanthe about the King of the Elves. This was based on Jaskier writing a story that basically said that Geralt, when he encountered the elves, and I think that was episode 2, that he slaughtered them, which Geralt is like, that's not how it happened. So we have yet another mention of Philandriel, who is the King of the Elves, or the so-called King of the Elves. He's been present throughout the entire story, but we've only met him once, which was in that episode where he and the other elves and the Sylvan captured Geralt and Jaskier.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we should just note that this guy is obviously important to the story, even though we've only seen him briefly and only heard from him. And I think that you're right to pull out the fact that Calanthe did not respond to the notion that she would have slaughtered the King of the Elves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very, very, very interesting that she doesn't respond to that, in my opinion, because I think, like, I also think back to some of the things that we said earlier in our take here. We were like, you know, that Ciri doesn't have that same kind of anger towards the elves that people in the world seem to have that are humans. And we kind of attribute that to the fact that would have had to come from Calanthe not putting that in her thoughts, in her mind. Like, because, right, she was raised by Calanthe and Ice, like, because of whatever happened with her parents. So there's something there where, like, Calanthe may utilize their hatred to, like, strengthen her armies and to win wars. But I don't necessarily think that she is, like, I think that there's deeper meaning there. And I think we may find out that Ciri's right, that she did not have a hatred towards the elves, just had certain other vendettas that she was trying to, like see out. So.
Mm-hmm.
So then, we get a little background on witchers. We've known for some time that there are not many witchers left. And in this episode, Geralt kind of talks about an incident that hasn't been spoken about a lot in the show, but he tells Calanthe that it was impossible for them to create more after the sacking of Cara Morhen. And Cara Morhen is a secluded castle where witchers were trained. There are different guilds of witchers that we won't get into this episode, but within the guild, there are different types of witchers, in this case with Geralt, will just say that he wears the wolf medallion and is called the White Wolf because the school of witchers that he is from is a school that kind of is named after the wolf. So, and that's why he wears that wolf medallion. But there are other schools and people that are witchers that wear different medallions. And during the sacking of that castle, there were a lot of lives were lost, and the magic and the mystery around how to create witchers was lost along with it. And that's what he's speaking to in this episode.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting, because I was wondering that too. So it was an interesting exchange, because I was like, he keeps saying that there's not many witchers left. And we saw in the last episode how excited he was when he heard that there was another witcher, mm-hmm. Only to find out that the Striga had
done short work
already. Yeah. Right, had already destroyed
even
that
with his
witcher.
Puny potion, his black eyes, he got nut killed quick.
So I think it was good that we finally understand why witchers are rare. Geralt is one of a few that are left in the world. We should also talk about the biggest reveal in this episode, which was this rule called the Law of Surprise. So the Law of Surprise is as old as humanity itself. It's basically a rule that as payment for a great deed, like saving someone's life, one can lay claim to something that the indebted doesn't know that they have yet. So I think Iced describes it as basically like it could be a bushel of wheat that a farmer doesn't know that he's going to grow yet. Or in some cases, it could be an unborn child that the father isn't aware has been conceived yet. So the promise must be honored, and is honored by all of the humans on the continent, because people don't dare to tempt fate. And it's interesting that this law of surprise basically governs like destiny and fate for humanity. I find it really interesting that the two of the main characters in this episode, Calanthe and Geralt, both think it's like bull. They both have different reasons of why they don't care for the notion of fate and destiny. I think they both, we know that they both kind of come around to it eventually, but they're both kind of dismissive of it. But Geralt still thinks that you have to honor this law, because he thinks a promise should be kept, be it by a farmer or a peasant or a queen. Mm-hmm. He thinks that if you make a promise, the promise has to be honored.
I just feel like when you get the moniker the White Wolf, you lose all diplomacy, think you always have to be honest, and then you just kind of have like this moral kind of code that says, yeah, you got to keep your word no matter what, no matter if it gets everybody killed and like a whole like place burnt down to the ground because you just couldn't say you wanted to be king. Anyway, I'm just like reading my own.
I was like, wait, where is this going? Yeah.
I just find it interesting that both Jon Snow and Geralt de Rivia are the White Wolf, and I just it's pretty cool. But
hashtag still salty about Game of Thrones.
Yeah, definitely still salty. Like, let's talk about Ciri's magic and stay in this story. So Malsak cannot bring order to Pavetta's chaos, and this might inform us a little bit about Ciri's abilities, and that. The incantations, right, that Pavetta, like we spoke about earlier, she's using are in Elder. So are they descendants of elves? We don't know yet. We will look, you know, down the road and hopefully find out more information. But there is some information to be found, I believe, in that train of thought. So that's
yeah. I also just want to note the Dryads also speak Elder.
Mm-hmm.
So it might be that there's nothing special about Elder in terms of it being an elf language. It might be that all of the magical creatures, that's their common language, right? But I just thought it was interesting that Pavetta, who like obviously didn't have any schooling in this, right,
mm-hmm.
Speaks Elder and knows how to essentially cast a spell.
Yeah, and Elder was the common language of this world before the conjunction of the spheres, right? This world was primarily, until the elves were ran out of their land and places where they live, they were the dominant people of this world. And so, like, maybe that's just what it is, you know, that people came here and had to learn Elder, and so they're bilingual. Who knows? So let's talk about the Witcher timeline so far and where we are, just based on the interactive map and timeline that Netflix produced and what we know of the story.
Yeah, so so we're only going to cover the things from the timeline that have happened so far. So we're not actually in the show. So we're not covering everything that's happened in the timeline, only because we don't want to spoil the next episode or the next couple episodes for you all, because there are things that are muddled in the timeline that we haven't seen on the show yet, but have happened in the world. So we will come back to this timeline again in a later episode, but since we finally have the link between Cirilla and Geralt, we wanted to just spend a little bit of time with what the order of events is up until this point.
Yep.
And so Geralt is our oldest character, as many people noticed.
Old man. Yeah.
Yes, he is born in 1160. Followed by Yennefer, who was born in 1192. They both look great.
Robin the Cradle. Jeez. There you go.
These two look great for their age. Yeah. Cirilla is born in 1250, meaning that Geralt is 90 years older than her. He's been around for an entire century before Cirilla is even born. That's crazy to me, but kind of awesome. He's aging beautifully. Yeah. Just looking great.
Oh, man.
Yaskier, it was born in 1222. What I really want to know is when was Roach born? What's going on with Roach?
Did he make him drink like a potion and say an incantation that allowed for Roach to just live forever? You know, maybe. Maybe that's what it is. I don't know. Who knows when Roach was born?
I have big questions about Roach. Like, he's had the same horse this entire story. Horses do not live that long.
Yeah. Here's the takeaway I have about Roach is that many times, especially in New York City, we just don't like roaches. But we always say they had to have been here from like the beginning of time. Here is proof that it doesn't matter if you have chaos in the world, a conjunction of the spheres. Like, roaches had to predate the naming of this horse, which means that they were around fucking forever. Ever, these motherfuckers. You can't kill them. They don't die, they multiply.
Anyway. And they will still be around after we're gone.
I know. Crazy. Crazy. So then, after, you know, all of that, Yen is, I guess, order of the events. Yen is attending Aretusa, a.k.a. Boring Hogwarts, and it takes place first, despite being introduced in episode 2. She starts her training in around 1206. So that's about when that happened. Again, we talked about last episode, but Yen's transformation takes place in 1210. And the curse of the Black Sun, which created Renfri and is referenced in episode 1, occurs in 1213.
So, the episode one, continuing with episode one, the events of episode one, where Geralt becomes a butcher of Blaviken, even though he didn't really do anything wrong, but, you know, whatever. That's the moniker he got. So that happens in 1231. 2 years later, Nilfgaard starts to move north, and Geralt and Yaskier meet in 1240, which is in episode two. And what's interesting about that year is that is the same year that Yen tries to save the princess, the baby princess. And that we're only seeing those events in this episode, episode 4.
Yeah, so that's interesting because that shows that the timeline that Geralt is in this episode is a little bit further down the road than Yen's timeline still, that we're seeing for her timeline in this episode. Basically, the events of the Striga and Temeria occur in 1243. That was in episode 3. And then 5 years later, in 1249, Geralt attends this banquet and becomes bonded to Princess Cirilla. And then Syntra is defeated by Nilfgaard in 1263, and Ciri goes on the run, which is what we saw in episode one.
So basically, the events of this story, episode four, is probably what happened the earliest, right?
Yeah, I think like in the events of this story, the early.
No. I'm sorry. Episode two is really where most of the stuff that happens first. So Yen being at Aretusa is one of the first things that takes place in the story. And the Curse of the Black Sun, which is in episode one.
Is
pretty early as well. So this storyline is a little bit confusing. I would still say what we just read was in the order in which things happen. I still think I'm going to point folks towards the timeline that Netflix produced, because it will bring a lot of clarity to characters in the story and when things happened.
Yeah, for sure. Well, cool. This brings us to the halfway point of our coverage in season two of The Witcher. You know, we just appreciate you guys so much for being engaged and leaving comments and on all the places where you listen to your podcast and, you know, hitting us up on Facebook and some of the people who have been following the show and messaging us. We really appreciate your support. We ask that, you know, keep listening and go do those things more. Like, if you want to, only 5-star reviews, though. No bad ones, just the good ones. Oh, man. Yeah, listen, I will invoke the law of surprise on that ass, all right? So, anyway, have a good rest of your week, and we'll see you next week.
Yeah, bye.